Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for April 20th, 2015. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, Cargill is seeking to enter the Indonesian poultry sector. We'll have that in other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason reports on why annual updates of the renewable fuel standard are important to the biofuel industry. And the folks from Earth Risk Technology in Chicago will look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's see how futures settled on this Monday afternoon. Hard red winter May wheat 512.5 up 3.25. The July contract also settling up 3.25 at 518. Soft May wheat 498.75 up 4.25 on the settlement. July 498.25 up 9. May corn settled at 378 down 1.75. July 384.75 down 2. September 392 down 2. December 401.25 down 2. May soybean settling 971.5 up 8.75. July 979.5 up 8, and November 958.25 up 5.5. May soybean meal settling 318.50 up 3.50. May soybean oil settling 31.59 up 7 cents. Now some last trades for you. April live cattle 155.30 down 2.50. April feeders 212.12.5 down 87.5. And May lean hog 69.95 down 37.5. And those are Monday's settlements from the Chicago Board of Trade.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that lower parts of the Midwest will encounter a few more showers Tuesday from Kansas to Kentucky and Ohio, with only light amounts of rain resulting. Wednesday will be mostly dry. Thursday and Friday, rainfall will be widespread from a part of the Central Plains through Ohio and Kentucky, as well as areas to the south into the interior southeastern states. Rainfall in Tennessee, the northern delta, and areas east to North Carolina may range from 1 to 2.5 inches. Saturday through Tuesday will be a drier biased period with only light showers expected in the Midwest, delta, and southeastern states. Meanwhile, U.S. temperatures this week will be cooler than usual in much of the Midwest, with highs in the 40s and 50s in the north and 50s and 60s in the south, and lows in the 20s and 30s in the north and 30s and 40s in the south. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, since we talked this morning, the market hadn't done a whole lot, and even it didn't do all that much on the close today.
Well, it continued spread activity. You know, they bought beans, sold corn, bought beans, and shared a little buying in the wheat for the most part. Yeah, but the only thing different is there's a little bit more talk about Yemen and then the Iranian boat heading to drop some missiles off to the terrorists. So I don't know if that generated some buying interest in the wheat or not. But that'll be watched overnight. See if there's any more news of that sort that comes out. But the trade wants to mainly focus on the this afternoon's planting progress report. More importantly, you know, a little bit more of a state breakdown and see where we're at that way. And then, of course, you know, like we mentioned this morning, you know, the weather forecast, and it's going to change just about every 6 hours. So just non-eventful, just sort of buying timing through here until the Newswire shows something to get excited about.
So if the report shows that planting is behind in the Delta, and by all accounts it should, given what we saw last week and the weather we've been experiencing, what are traders going to make of all that?
Well, the Delta's kind of touchy because, you know, you're Arkansas was the main one, Louisiana.
Yeah.
You know, they only got 600,000 acres, and
right.
You know, they jumped 40% there all in 1 week. Now, is that actual planting progress? Are guys giving up switching to other things? We'll see. But we'll see if that's newsworthy or not. They are important, but you know, when you look at the big picture in here, the total volume out of that region, you know, it's not substantial, but, you know, every little bit counts. And if you got a farm there, yeah, you're important. So we'll see how those numbers unfold. The thing, if they do start to switch, you know, which way they switch to, for say, because it seems like the South continues to, be the ones that struggle in here, of course. But the upper Midwest is going to be more of a factor, I think. I think there's going to be a little bit more headway than what some of the trade's looking for. If you're wet, you're looking at only 5-6% complete. That's where we were a year ago, 6%. But if you're in areas that's made tremendous headway, you know, this investment's more up towards that 12-14% complete as a nation. But we'll see what the breakdown statewide is. But, you know, we're going to watch the planning progress for the next 3-4 weeks, and after that, it's just going to hinge on temperature and moisture readings from there on out.
Now, I was going to say, it really is too much, too early to really get excited about weather, isn't it?
Well, if it was May 20th, I'd say, yeah, we need to add some weather premium or take some weather premium out. But, you know, we still got a couple weeks. These guys can make, a lot of headway. They can, you know, plan as much 10 to 15% as a nation per day if they really
right.
wanted to.
50% a week if you really wanted to push it. That's right.
Yeah, and these guys are aggressive. You know, they're the best farmers in the world. I've got great confidence in them.
Well, they always seem to get the crop in, even if they have to mud it in toward the end. Let me ask you this. Why are soybeans rallying?
Well, beans, got to remember, guys forget this. If you go back, we've already broke quite a bit off the highs we were from last year. We were quite a bit higher. We've taken a lot of premium out of the bean market. Secondly is we were virtually out of beans last fall, and we came in and saw producers sell beans and store the corn. A lot of beans went into strong hands. A lot of beans went in to meet strong demand. And there's still some decent demand floating around. We shipped a lot of the beans out. Everybody feels, you know, beans are bearish. Well, they are long-term this fall. And long-term this fall, you know, we'll go ahead and get the acres in and see favorable weather. We're going to be quite a bit lower from where we're at now. But at the present time in here, the market's not really ready to do that right now. A lot of people got the horse, walking backwards instead of forwards here. And I feel that over time and through here, once beans start to break this lower level support, then the bearishness will kick in. But it's probably not going to kick in until we get into the first part of June, last part of May.
All right, let's turn our attention then to the wheat market. What are the features there?
Well, basically, commodity short covering. Commodity funds been huge shorts in the wheat, huge shorts in the beans. I think that, we're starting to see a little disease or weather concern in the soft red winter wheat market. And that's supported the soft wheat market. I think we just saw some spread unwinding. You get July wheat. We've got a cyclical low is due now, and the momentum indicators are oversold. I wouldn't be surprised to see, this July wheat Chicago run back up to this 520-25 area. But before you know it, here we're going to start seeing some harvest pressure start to come in here, not too far away, because wheat in the south is taking a big jump in here, starting to head out.
And the big mover on the day wasn't in the grains. It was in livestock, specifically cattle, live cattle. And the June contract is currently down 312.5, and the May feeders are down 295, and they were down well over $3 just a little while ago, too.
Active selling. We're seeing overall meat concerns as far as supply. Bird flu, especially, is going to start backing up poultry quite a bit. Some of these foreign buyers are starting to target, state by state, per se, trying to remain open on importing some of our meat. But that's kind of the fear. Also, too, we're seeing a lot of meat cross the border due to the strong dollar. So we're going to see some additional supplies continue to come on the market through here, and we're going to have plenty of supply to work with here as we go into this summer. But most definitely, the speculative trade's sort of given up here on the long side, until we see what type of demand starts to surface here as temperatures start to warm up.
What else before we let you go today?
Well, that's about it. We got some reports here this afternoon. We'll see what they have to say. That'll give the market some direction tonight. Then, secondly, we'll watch the world news and see what happens internationally, if there's anything to get excited about that. But other than that, I think we're just kind of no man's land. We just continue to be in the same range we've been in for the last 6 months.
Thank you much, Kurt.
All right, take care, Dave.
Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, and he is in Normal, Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
In agricultural news, Cargill is seeking to enter the Indonesian poultry sector. The Minnesota-based company is in active discussions, including building a new facility and likely partnering with a Indonesian company. Minnesota-based Cargill, one of the world's largest privately held companies, is also building mills in Indonesia to follow investments it made earlier this year in palm oil. China's central bank says that it will cut its bank reserve requirement ratio by 1 percentage point to stimulate more lending into a slowing economy. The new reserve requirement takes effect today. The move allows banks to hold onto less of their money and lend more of it. The cut will release $194 billion into the world's second biggest economy. The central bank also says it will cut an extra 1 percentage point for commercial banks providing agricultural financing and an extra 2 percentage points for the Agricultural Development Bank of China. It will also cut the requirement by an additional half a percentage point to eligible banks that lend a certain share of loans to agricultural borrowers and small businesses. Japan's top trade negotiator is meeting with U.S. Trade Representative Michael Froman, seeking to resolve differences on autos and farm exports that are hindering progress toward a Pacific Rim trade deal. Japan wants greater market opening for its exports of autos and auto parts. The U.S. hopes to export more rice, pork, and other farm products to Japan. The talks between the two nations are part of negotiations among 12 countries participating in the U.S.-led Trans-Pacific Partnership. Federal Reserve Bank of New York President William Dudley today says he is hopeful that weakness seen over the start of the year will not last, and he still hopes the Fed will raise short-term interest rates at some point this year. Dudley also says that raising rates off of current rock-bottom levels does not mean the U.S. monetary policy will be tight after a rate increase action. Dudley also says that the strong dollar has had an impact on the economy, making U.S. exports more expensive and imports more competitive. Some analysts today are suggesting that U.S. corn growers could see a bumper crop this year thanks to warm waters in the Pacific Ocean. Pacific Ocean forecasts from almost every international weather agency call for a weak to moderate El Nino to be in effect either from now or by June at the latest through November. The time span covers the entire Northern Hemisphere summer. El Nino prospects are being closely watched because there is a strong correlation with corn production. A review of summer seasons with El Nino shows that going back to 1950, corn yields exceeded trend line more than half the time and included record yielding seasons 1969, 1972, 1982, and 2004, when final corn yields were more than 10% above trend line. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Soon, the United States Environmental Protection Agency should release its annual update to the Renewable Fuel Standard mandates. Todd Gleason reports this year's RFS is really important to the biodiesel industry.
More often than not, when the federal government's renewable fuel standard is discussed, people are thinking about corn-based ethanol or other feedstocks that can produce ethanol. However, when U.S. EPA finally releases the RFS mandates, supposedly sometime this month, it may be the biodiesel industry that pays the most attention.
The industry for which the RFS is really a life-or-death matter is biodiesel.
That's University of Illinois Ag economist Scott Irwin. Biodiesel, by the way, is mostly produced from soybean oil.
Because if the EPA would choose to go back to the statutory levels of the RFS mandates, at least for a few years here in the short run, it would launch likely the biggest boom in biodiesel's history. But if they choose to stay on the path of the proposals from late 2013, it basically cuts the knees out from the industry. So they're sitting there right on the edge waiting to find out what happens.
This edge made the industry unhappy with the federal government earlier this year when it opened the door for biodiesel imported from Argentina to qualify as an advanced biofuel under the U.S. RFS mandates. Scott Irwin sees this move far more favorably than the industry.
I favor the position that the EPA is likely to move the mandate levels back up near or at the statutory levels at least by 2015, if not 2016. That is going to necessitate a tremendous boom in biodiesel production, more than U.S. production capacity. So one view of the Argentine biodiesel announcement is that it's a precursor to them going back to the statutory levels, which would require that they can document that there's enough registered biodiesel production in the U.S. and outside the U.S. to fill the mandates.
It may be, then, that the January announcement allowing Argentine biodiesel to qualify as an advanced biofuel in the United States sets the stage for U.S. EPA to follow the letter of the law as written by Congress. It's not possible to do so without additional gallons of advanced fuel from some source. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now with cash grain analysis is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
We haven't talked in the afternoon for a couple of weeks, so I guess what I want to ask you is, are you taking any more old crop corn in as new sales?
We've been taking in old crop corn, but not as sales. Farmers are bringing it in, but on days when they're not in the field and on days when the roads and the weather cooperate. But that has not translated into actual selling. So they're holding on and waiting. And I think at this point, if they've held on this long, they're probably going to wait and see how planting progress develops. And then if everything looks well, and depending on what they think the forecast, weather forecast is for the summer, then we might see it move. But it certainly hasn't moved the last couple of months. And I guess I don't anticipate farmer movement to pick up in the next month. Okay. As well.
Okay, so therefore you're looking at maybe somewhere in May, maybe early June. What does that do to your pipeline?
It keeps the basis levels extremely strong up until the point where the farmers do let loose of that corn. So the corn is out there, it's just not moving, and so the purpose of the basis levels are to encourage movement, whether that's from the farm or from the elevators. And so I anticipate firm basis levels up until that point when the farmers let loose of some of this corn.
Could it be you're going to be dealing with two crops at the same time?
Yes, yes. It certainly appears that way. There's a little bit of carry in the market, so a farmer's not going to get penalized for holding on to that corn, other than if the overall futures price drops. But from a carry point of view, there is a little bit of carry in the market from old crop to new crop. So from that point of view, a farmer could theoretically justify holding on to it into the fall.
All right, let's turn our attention then to new crop soybeans. What about sales there?
We saw a fair amount of sales last year in October, November, December when the board was above $10, but since they've been below $10, we haven't seen much interest in making sales. So hopefully we got a bunch sold prior to this recent sell-off, and now I think farmers are just waiting to see, again, what kind of start we get off to planting-wise.
From a historic point, what percentage of new crop soybean sales are you based on, 5-year average, 10-year average, that kind of thing?
I think we're probably at 25%, which is about average, maybe just a little bit behind, but not a lot, compared to the corn, where we're way behind average on corn sales at this point.
All right. Why don't we have your prices today, then?
All right. Old crop corn is $3.74, new corn $3.78, old beans are $9.70, new beans are $9.36, old wheat $4.89, and new wheat $4.90.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and he is in Champaign, Illinois. And I'll be back with 2 minutes with a look at agricultural weather with the folks from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. It's National Pineapple Upside Down Cake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1821, Franz Karl Achar died, a German chemist. He invented a process for the large-scale extraction of table sugar from beets. In 1801, he opened the world's first sugar beet factory in what is now modern-day Poland. In 1856, Robert Livingston Stevens died, a U.S. engineer and chip designer. He invented the widely used inverted T railway rail and the railroad spike. He found that rails laid on wooden ties with crushed stone or gravel beneath provided a roadbed superior to any known before. He also added the cow catcher to the locomotive and increased the number of drive wheels to 8 for better traction. In 1862, the first test of pasteurization was completed. The test container was opened at a meeting of the French Academy of Sciences. It contained dog's blood and urine that had been maintained at an elevated temperature, and neither liquid showed observable decay or fermentation, leading to the idea that foods could be heated to kill germs without significantly altering their chemical composition. And in 1999, the Disney film A Bug's Life was released. It was the first 100% digital DVD. It was transferred directly from the digital source to the compact disc. And that's this day in agricultural history. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated in Chicago. Good afternoon, Mark.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I suppose the question that folk down in the Delta have is, are you going to change this weather pattern anytime soon?
Well, the pattern here, Dave, at least, again, for this week, just remains on the unsettled side, with the main opportunity for shower and thunderstorm activity occurring later on this week and over the upcoming weekend. And overall, that looks to continue into next week as well. Okay, so one, on the positive side of things, it does look like your amounts and the overall widespread nature of some of the rains is not quite as what it's been here lately, but certainly that active weather that's been prevalent looks to continue through month's end and even into the start of May as well.
So what are your best guesses for when people might get out the field and start seriously planning? I know there's been some in Illinois, especially central Illinois and the western part of the state, but the rest, not so much.
Yeah, well, as we go through the remainder of this week, specifically in the Midwest, it's a pretty open week. You have some what we call instability showers right now in areas of the northern Corn Belt. However, as we go into tomorrow, that looks totally open, dry, albeit cooler than normal, but the drier, cooler than normal conditions look to persist all week long. And that's true really across the entire Corn Belt here in the Midwest. And so while being cooler than normal, it does look like overall with the dry conditions that will be favorable for planting. As we go into next week, it does look like temperatures will be warming up, getting back to more normal levels, even warmer than normal across the western Corn Belt as we go through next week. So all in all here, as we go through the remainder of the month, specifically in the Midwest, it looks like a pretty good time frame here for corn planting.
And talk a little bit about your conditions out in the western wheat belt.
Well, certainly they've improved over the past week with shower and thunderstorm activity, high coverage here, extending all the way from Nebraska, Colorado in the north, all the way to northern Texas in the south. And that's especially true in areas of Oklahoma, which has probably done the best overall. But there still is one swath of acreage that's kind of missed out here, and that's portions of western Kansas down through the western parts of the Oklahoma-Texas panhandle. So that's the area that has missed out up to this point. The pattern overall for the plains still looks active, especially this week with yet another wave of low pressure tracking in during the middle to end of this week. I guess for the one area, though, that's kind of missed out, with the upcoming system looking pretty similar from a track and strength standpoint, that could continue to miss out overall with these opportunities. But certainly from a macro standpoint, the plains hard red belt is in much better shape compared with, gosh, just 10, 12 days ago.
Thank you much, Mark.
You're welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo from Earth Risk Technologies Incorporated out of Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can listen to this report again on the internet. Go to our website at willag.org. This is Dave Dickey.